ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment, food as sport, food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me.
I hate to ask you to do anything, but if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of the above on whatever app you're getting it from. My guest today is Dean Karnazes. He is an ultra marathon runner and author of the book Ultra Marathon Man. Please enjoy our conversation. Dean Karnazes, welcome to the American Glutton Podcast.
Thank you for having me run by.
Yeah. Thanks so much for doing this, man. Listen, I can't run, but I personally have no hope of ever doing an ultra marathon. But I do imagine, even if you like running, even if you wake up every day and you just go, I want to go for a run, at some point in an ultra marathon, there comes a point where you have to beat your body and your mind. And I'm really interested in hearing about how you do that. I mean, unless you just say, no, I'm a freak. I love it the whole way. And if I didn't have to sleep, I could run forever and never stop. Like, I can't imagine that's the case.
You know, there's a sense of exploration when you do these kind of things, both, you know, the environment and in external and internal. I think that for me, when things get tough, I kind of, you know, there's a saying, embrace the suck.
Yeah.
I eat it up. I'm like, all right, this is horrible. Like you're throwing up, you're shitting in your pants, you're cramping. This, I don't know if I've ever been this bad before. I love this shit. You know, can it get worse? And so I kind of, you know, just lean into the torture. And then, you know, honestly, when things get really, really bleak, people say, what do you think about? And you're thinking is the problem. You need to turn off your mind. So I literally just put on the blinders to how much further I got to go. I don't reflect on the past. I just think of one thing, my next footstep. So all I do in my mind is say, take your next footstep to the best of your ability and your next footstep. It's almost like this zen-like trance you get into. But I've become very disciplined at not letting my mind wander and just focus on that one thing. And sometimes I'll do that for couple hours if it's really, you know, really a dark moment.
Hours. Okay. Does it require data beforehand? Because I know that if you look at like a lot of different studies, we can see that our mind will limit us and our bodies can actually do much more than we perceive that they can do. Do you have to go into it knowing that? Or Because my mind will tell me, like, you're going to break, don't hurt yourself. You know, a lot of that, which is like a governor, which slows me down, which tries to stop me. And, you know, I have to ignore that. I completely understand turning it off and ignoring the mind. But does it require data? Do you have to go into it knowing that? Like, set up some real guardrails where you could hurt yourself?
I'm the wrong guy to ask that question. I just pushed, you know, I've been doing this for 3 decades and I've never had an injury.
Wow.
So I demand a lot of my body. I take good care of my body, but I just push through pain. I ignore things. I ignore signals that say stop. And I haven't broken yet. Maybe one day I will, but I don't pay attention to it. I just think that, you know, I've seen my body, what it's capable of. I've seen myself come back from the dead and run another 50 miles.
It's insane.
Yeah, no, I mean, one of my sayings is endurance comes from enduring.
Right.
So you learn about endurance just by throwing yourself into these situations and seeing, you know, how far you can go.
Yeah. Okay. So like you're running a marathon to the South Pole, right? Not the North Pole. I don't think you can run one to the North Pole. Maybe you can. It's freezing. I mean, beyond freezing. You don't have snowshoes on. What is going through your head then? Is that just not the right question? Because nothing, because you've turned off whatever would be going through a normal or an average person's head?
You know, you're in a heightened sense of awareness. I mean, that was a kind of a sketchy situation because, you know, the South Pole is the most remote place on Earth, and this whole thing kind of unraveled, and what I was doing running on the polar plateau, you know, without any support was ludicrous. I mean, absolutely ludicrous. You know, it's minus 35 degrees. You know, you can't tie your shoes because you take your gloves off and you get frostbite. You know, you've got to wear this neoprene muffler in front of your face because you can't breathe in this super chilled air. It'll freeze your lungs. So I was so focused on not dying, literally, and trying to keep my body moving because I was so afraid if I slowed down, I was going to get frostbite and hypothermia. So that was a really sketchy, you know, 9 hours of running. And usually a marathon takes me around 3 or 4 hours at most. And that was 9 hours of slogging through the snow, hoping I wouldn't die. Yeah.
Were there people waiting for you at the South Pole? Did you have like a rescue crew at all?
It was one of those clusters where, you know, I was supposed to be home in 12 days. I told my wife, you know, and 31 days later, I came home. I mean, wow. I learned how dangerous it was. And, you know, there's supposed to be 30 to 40 intrepid runners from around the globe all convening on the South Pole for the, you know, inaugural South Pole Marathon. There was 3 of us and it was one and done. I mean, they've never tried to do it again. It was really dangerous. And it got to the point where we were stuck on the polar plateau trying to do this marathon for 10 days and the weather just wouldn't clear. It wasn't safe. And we had this snowmobile that no one had adjusted the carburetor for altitude because the South Pole's at like 11,000 feet above sea level. So this snowmobile that was supposed to be supporting us was really unreliable.
Oh my God.
And I thought, and there was talk that we just need to abandon, like, let's just get out of here. And I thought, I've invested so much time and effort into this, I'm not leaving until, you know, I run this damn marathon. And that's, you know, that's when you make bad decisions, is kind of under that pressure cooker. And that's what kept going through my mind. It's like, you're going to die because you should have just packed it up and left.
I mean, I'm thinking about it now, like you could have gone through the ice. There are probably crevasses, hidden crevasses. I mean, that seems nuts.
Yeah, in hindsight, there's so many times I look back on shit I've done and thought, wow, it's amazing you're not dead.
Yeah.
There's so many times, you know, when something tragic happens, you know, if you're spared your life, you look back and say, shit, that was horrible. But when it doesn't happen, you don't really think it could have happened. But I look back now, I reflect back now on so many events that I've done where I thought you could have fallen off that cliff, that, you know, that ice shelf could have broken off, this and that, you know. So it's, yeah, I'm still here.
I was reading about you. You started running very young, right? You started running by running home from school.
Running home from kindergarten, yeah.
Okay, going from running home from kindergarten to running 80 hours straight with no sleep, unbroken, 80, which just seems truly impossible to me. Are you just pushing it more and more and seeing what you're capable of? Or, I mean, what is the evolution like there?
Well, I heard about this 50-mile race and I thought that's impossible. Like a human can't run a 50 miles. There's hotels or there's trickery. I thought, you get in a car, there's bikes along the way or campgrounds. And the guy said, no, the gun goes off and you just run and you stop when you cross the finish line. And I thought, that's so fucked up. I got to try it. So I did this 50-mile race and I finished. And it was the toughest thing I'd ever done. I mean, it was so painful. And I'm sitting there in the medic tent with wrapped in this like Mylar blanket, shivering. And I see these two guys high-fiving each other, saying, "We qualified, we qualified." And I'm thinking, for the insane asylum, like, what did you qualify for? The guy's like, "No, dude, we qualified for the Western States 100-mile endurance run."
Oh my
I'm
God.
like, "Hold it, 100 miles? Like, twice this far?" And he's like, yeah. I said, "Well, where do you sleep or where do you stop at night?" He's like, "You don't. You put on a headlamp and you just run straight through the night and you cross a river." I'm like, "Well, how do you eat?" He's like, "You just eat while you run." And the last thing they said before they walked out of there is like, "Hey, buddy, you qualified as well." And when they said that to me, I knew I would never live down that moment unless I ran this 100-mile race. I knew forever. From past that point, I would look back and say, "God, you qualified and you didn't have the courage to do it." So I did this 100-mile race, and it just proved to me that what was impossible was now achievable. So after that, I thought, there's this 135-mile race across Death Valley in the middle of summer, the Badwater Ultra Marathon. Did that, and there was really nothing beyond that race. But I heard about this 200-mile 12-person relay race. And I just asked if I could sign up for it as a team of one.
Oh my God.
And so I ran 200 miles and I thought, holy shit, I just ran 200 miles. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, the headspace to get into that for me, it's very hard to picture that evolution. I mean, I do understand it, but it's just I mean, it seems slightly masochistic, no? Like, I think that anything like that requires at least a change of perspective from what is normally perceived as just painful or brutal, and you got to learn to like it somehow.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the appeal is, but you're absolutely right. I think that people are drawn to these kind of tough events that hurt you. It is a lot of physical pain, and it's not just ultra marathoning. I mean, marathoning is experiencing a resurgence right now, like I've never seen. I mean, there are a lot of kids in their 20s and even earlier, like late teens, that are running marathons. And I just don't, I asked them what is the appeal? And they're just like, wow, it's really fucking hard. Like I don't, there's not a lot of hard things in my life these days, and I'm gonna do something really hard. And that takes a lot of focus and discipline. There's something appealing about that to a certain person.
Yeah, no, I used to ride bicycles and I could do a century, which is 100 miles on a bicycle, pretty much no problem. I went out for a Live Strong event in Austin and went out with the Mellow Johnny's guys. That's the bicycle shop that was associated with the event. And we rode 100 miles and that was not bad. And then I tried to run a 5K the next day. And man, my legs were blown out from the 5K. Like the cardiovascular effort wasn't hard at all because it was like nothing compared to what I was used to doing on a bicycle. But I just my lower back, my hips, my legs, they hurt so bad from 3 miles or whatever a 5K is that I was just off, it wasn't worth it because I could get the satisfaction of doing something hard. Riding a bike was very hard, and I understand suffering, and I enjoyed suffering on a bike, but I did not like not being able to walk for a couple of days after a very short run. I mean, it's really another thing altogether. You said earlier that you take good care of your body. What does that mean? What do you do?
One thing I never do is I never sit down. You can probably tell right now I'm standing up. So, if I don't have to travel anywhere, I have a commitment that from the moment I get out of bed, until the moment I crawl back into bed at night, I don't sit down. So I do everything standing up, do all my writing, my emails, everything, interviews, standing up. I have this HIIT training routine with body weight. It's about 12 to 14 minutes, and it's basically, you know, push-ups, pull-ups, chair dips, burpees. It's like a combination of those. And I cycle through those throughout the course of the day. So I've already done like two sets this morning. And, you know, after the interview, I'll do another set. And then I obviously I run as well. And I cross train. I cycle. I've done a number of centuries and double centuries. So I do a lot of cross training on mostly now this thing called an elliptigo, which is a stand up bike. It's basically a bike, but you're standing up.
You're making the motions of like an elliptical machine.
Yes. Handlebars are stationary, and it's got gears. It's like 12 gears. You know, it's got disc brakes, but it's you're running like this. It's tough because you're not very aerodynamically efficient because you're standing straight up. But I've done, you know, centuries and really enjoy it. And you're right. Even after a 100-mile elliptigo, it's different than running like a marathon. Like the next day, you feel not as brutalized, I think, on a century.
No, there's just that. I mean, listen, it's tough work for the legs, but there's no impact. You're not making contact with the ground every second or, you know, every half second. I don't know what your cadence is like, but I imagine it's pretty quick. And so, you know, I almost think of like running as like the ground is punching you a million times over the course of a run. You know what I mean? And it's jarring. Like to me, when I think about running, I think of like a savage type of torture.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it gets easier. I'm always amazed at the range of human ability, because when you first start running, it's horrible. And you know, like even to run a mile is really tough, a continuous mile, and eventually you're able to do it, and then 2 miles, and then 10 miles, and then, you know, 100 miles, you're able to just sustain yourself. And it's really crazy because, you know, someone of the same age, you know, even the same build that runs 100 miles, their neighbor who, you know, doesn't run at all, finds it hard to run 1 mile. Right. And we're the same species, but it's just, you know, the body adapts.
Yeah. And I think that endurance is one of the things that has allowed us to evolve the way we have. Because you don't see that. You see a lot of other mammals that can go very fast for a short distance, but there aren't that many that have the ability to do the kind of stuff that you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, there's an entire theory on that thread that basically says that's why we evolved to be humans the way we are, because we could chase down prey. You know, we don't have fur, so we're better at heat dissipation. And you know, I've beaten horses in 100-mile foot races, so I know a man can outrun a horse over a long distance.
Yeah. Yeah. When I think back to like people going across the country on horses or horse-drawn carriages, I think they were making an average of like 20 miles a day, you know, and that might be a leisurely pace, but, you know, if you're going to chase a horse for 100 miles, chances are, as long as you can keep going at like an average speed, you will beat it at some point.
Yeah. I told you I'm 100% Greek, and you know, the original marathoner, Pheidippides, was part of a class of citizen called Hemodromi, which means day long runner. And the Greeks realized that in the mountainous and you know, hilly and hot terrain of southern Greece, a man could outrun a horse. So they trained these foot messengers to be like a faster internet. You know, they could outrun a cavalry if they got invaded, and they could disseminate and collect information, intelligence quicker on foot than on horseback.
Wow. And that's how the marathon got into the Olympic Games initially.
It's a fascinating history. The gentleman Pheidippides, the runner, actually, it's better known that he ran from Athens to Sparta to recruit the Spartans. So if you've ever seen like 300, you know, who's the most badass fighting force in ancient Greece, it's the Spartans. So he ran this ultra marathon before he ran the marathon.
Oh, wow.
It's like 150 miles from Athens to Sparta. And he did it in, he arrived the day after setting out, which is like sub 36 hours.
Right.
Which is insane because, you know, there's, he didn't have a GPS. He didn't have a smartphone. You know, he didn't have any sort of footwear, like our modern footwear. He didn't have, you know, consistent access to food or water. I mean, he foraged along the way and he ran 150 miles in sub 36 hours. So, you know, these guys were real fit.
Yeah. And then they dumbed it down for the Olympics. They were like, we're going to have average citizens perform this. They're only going to have to do 26 miles.
Yeah, it's more, the story's actually more colorful than that because apparently after he got to Sparta, the Spartans said, we'll come help you Athenians, you know, battle the Persians, but we can't leave for 6 days because our religion forbids us from leaving for battle until the moon is full. And that won't be for 6 days. So Pheidippides thought, I got to tell my Athenian brethren that, you know, the Spartans are coming and they're just delayed. So he ran to Marathon, and Marathon is actually a place in Greece. It's called the Bay of Marathon, and Marathon means field of fennel, you know, like wild fennel, which grows all over the coast of Greece. So the word Marathon actually means field of fennel.
Oh, wow.
But he got to Marathon, you know, the Athenians decided they couldn't wait 6 days, and they, you know, they attacked the Persians and they somehow defeated them. And then the last marathon, you know, Pheidippides ran from the battlefield to the Acropolis, and he proclaimed Nike, Nike, or Nike, Nike, which means victory, victory. We are victorious. And then he died.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's a great story.
Phil Knight got his, you know, the name of his company, by the way.
Right. From Pheidippides.
Yeah.
Running around to save Greece.
Yeah. And then, yeah, the modern Olympics, in the ancient Olympics, you know, the longest distance was what they call a stade, which is just a lap around the state. That's where we get the term stadium. And so, and it was like, you know, so it's like 400 meters. They didn't have a marathon, but the marathon happened in 1896 with the modern Olympics.
Okay. Mm. And that was just because they went back and looked at the history and were like, dudes, we're running this far. Let's make them run a long distance.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a French guy that came up with it, actually. And the original marathon was 24.8 miles. Like the distance from the marathon to the Acropolis is 24.8 miles. And the guy who won the first marathon was a Greek guy. He was a fisherman who ran barefoot. And at the midway point, he stopped in a taverna and he had a shot of whiskey and a raw egg.
That was his like energy.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's amazing. I always get tripped out when I see old pictures of cyclists smoking cigarettes because they thought it would open their lungs, you know, and then having a Coke would be their big energy drink, you know, but like a shot of whiskey and an egg. That sounds good. You got protein, fat, and maybe some alcohol sugar from the whiskey.
Yeah, alcohol definitely numbs the pain.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, having done all these things, are you done pushing yourself, or are there bigger, crazier things you're interested in doing?
Yeah. I mean, I'm still running 100-mile races all the time and further. So I'm still doing those, you know, a few times a year, if not more. And I've been working on this project with a buddy of mine, who's another ultramarathoner. And we're trying to run from the lowest point on Earth to the highest point on Earth.
From Death Valley. Death Valley is the lowest point on Earth, right?
Death Valley is the lowest point in the Western Hemisphere.
Okay, so there's a lower point in the Eastern Hemisphere?
In the East, yep. Yep.
How low is it?
It's, I think it's over 500 feet below sea level. It's the Dead Sea in Jordan.
Okay.
Yeah. And then obviously the highest point on Earth is Mount Everest. So we're trying to do an ultra marathon from the lowest to the highest.
Okay, but how would that work? Because that's way more than 100 miles.
Yeah, no, it'd be multi-day. It takes us about 4 to 5 months. We're trying to work out the logistics right now. Wow. And you've got to arrive at base camp of Everest, you know, within a certain window, because you can only, you know, get to the top like mid-April to, you know, mid-May kind of thing.
Right. I mean, that sounds completely psychotic to me. Just outlandishly nuts. I hope you do it.
Yeah. I mean, I've run across the U.S. So I've run from L.A. to New York City. The distance is maybe a little bit further than that, but I know what it's like to run 40 to 50 miles a day for 75 days.
Wow. And
yeah.
That's what it took you, 75 days to run across America?
Yes.
And that's stopping and sleeping.
Continuous. That was stopping and sleeping. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I mean that, yeah, I guess who could stay awake for that long? What was that like?
It was glorious. I mean, you know, to experience the whole country on foot, it's kind of romantic in a way. And you certainly see a lot more than when you do a road trip.
Yeah.
And it's a little more immersive in experience. And yeah, there were endearing moments, you know, running through the countryside. And then there were, you know, horrible moments running along major thoroughfares.
When you're doing that, are you running on highways or are you trying to find like off-road paths?
We tried to use as much off-road, at least off the beaten path, paths as possible. But sometimes you had to go into the main highways.
Yeah. And I imagine when you'd be running through nature, it's beautiful. And then you get to a city and there's like rush hour traffic and cars zooming around. It's probably not that great.
Yeah. You know, the it was endearing in certain ways, like the truckers, you know, because they all commute. They're all talking to each other constantly as they're driving. They would pass me and someone say, oh, there's that guy's running across America. So these trucks would whiz by and they'd honk, which would scare the crap out of me. You know, I knew they were doing it, you know, to wish me well. But I mean, when there's a big rig coming up behind you at 70 miles an hour and they honk, it's just absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, I bet. Mm. Do you pay much attention to what you eat or do you eat whatever you want?
You know, I used to eat whatever I want. You know, in my first book, I famously write about doing that relay I was telling you about, that 200-mile relay. And I was out in the middle of nowhere late at night and I had run out of food. But thankfully, it was a flip phone. Remember the Motorola? I had a flip phone and a credit card. So I called a pizza, called Roundtable, and had them deliver a pizza to me on the run.
And they just found you while you were running and gave you a pizza and you ate it while you were running?
Well, I mean, I told the guy the coordinates. Like I said, here's where I am. And this, you know, how long is it going to take? He's like, probably 45 minutes. Or I'm like, let's meet on this corner.
Right.
He's like, hold it. Is that your house? I'm like, well, it is now. He had no idea. He was delivering it to a runner.
Right.
And he brought it to me and he's like, dude, this is outrageous. He's like, what are you going to do? But I told him to make it with a really thin crust and not to slice it. And then I rolled it into this big, like pizzerito, like a big burrito. God. And I just mowed it, you know, in this roll as I ran.
And eating like that while you're running, that didn't mess up your stomach or anything like that?
No, it was delicious. Yeah. I mean, you know, people hear about that story and they're like, I could never eat a pizza while I'm running. I wasn't sprinting. I was running 200 miles. So
right.
It's kind of shuffling at a point. And, you know, I couldn't eat a pizza like that on a shorter run.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I imagine after whatever distance you'd already run, your body is just so hungry. It's begging for anything you're going to put in it.
Yeah. You're pretty much in caloric deficit no matter what you eat. Cause you know, you just can't put that much food in your stomach.
Yeah. And so, okay, that was back then. Now today, are you concerned with how you eat or are there any?
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments.
Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
You know, do you think of food in terms of health and not health and good and bad food, or are you able to just think of food as food?
No, I'm pretty particular about what I eat nowadays. I mean, I like to say if I can't, dig it from the earth or pluck it from a tree or catch it with my hands, I don't eat it. Okay. So I've gotten away from packaged food. You know, I mean, for the past, I've been like keto, paleo, pescatarian for about the last 15 years. In my normal everyday diet. Right. So you're too young to know a guy named Jack LaLanne.
No, I remember Jack LaLanne, sure.
He was like my mentor, and he said, Dean, if man makes it, don't eat it. And if it tastes good, spit it out. So I kind of follow that. Nothing too sweet, nothing too messed with that goes in my mouth.
And for a really long effort, are you eating any kind of refined sugars or gels or anything like that?
Yeah, when I'm doing an event, I kind of shift my eating strategy, and I do certain gels. Some gels are made with maltodextrin, so they're not as syrupy and sweet, because eating a lot of gels just gets nauseating after a while.
Yeah,
I also like nut butters.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Like hazelnut butters, probably my favorite. Cashew nut butter.
I used to eat these things called Bonk Breakers, which were bars that just tasted like they were mostly made of nut butters and whole grains or something like that. It was just a really dense square of energy.
Yeah, I remember that company. I don't know if they're still around, but I remember having their stuff.
Yeah. There are interesting products out there that you can find. Like, I think... I think that's a concern for some people with who eat clean, like the way you're describing. I think of eating very clean. And then you get into it and you're like, well, it's not super conducive to a long effort to have like a giant bag of apples on your back or bananas or something. You know what I mean? You want to put something in a small pocket. You need condensed energy.
Yeah, no, I mean, I work pretty closely with Hammer Nutrition. And they have these raw bars that are basically, it's six ingredients and it's all raw. And it's a nut butter is the base. And they're kind of like Bonk Breakers. They're really dense and really tasty and no simple sugars. There's no sucrose or, cane sugar or anything like that in there. So, and even a lot of their, energy drinks are made with maltodextrin and a good source of, carbohydrates. It's not, there's no simple sugars in there.
Right. Yeah. Did you notice from the time where you would order a pizza on a run? I mean, were you eating, was your diet similar then and you just found yourself out in the sticks and needed something and got a pizza, or were you eating whatever you wanted back then?
I had no idea what the heck I was doing, just 30 years ago. So I was eating whatever, potato chips, whatever I take, sweets, anything. I was always, when you run 200 miles, you're just almost always constantly starving.
Right.
So I was just eating anything and it got me to the finish. I could probably do that nowadays as well during a race. I just, as I've gotten, older, I've noticed that my energy levels really are pronounced more when I eat junk food. So yeah. I'd rather just fast than eat. Like people say, how do you travel? And, if I'm in an airport and I can't find anything healthy, I'd rather fast than eat something bad, because I just know it'll make me feel so horrible.
Yeah, I find traveling to be really difficult. And one of my issues has always been like anxiety and I think also boredom. And so traveling, like, doesn't matter where I'm going or how long the flight is. I sit down on an airplane and I just become ravenously hungry. And most of the time I will pack my own food for a trip. Sometimes I don't, and it just gets really tricky. But I think if you can get into the habit of fasting, like, or being willing to fast for a period of time, because, you know, I don't think there's really anybody in America who's gonna damage themselves by fasting for a travel day, right? Like, I think we're all pretty much okay. Yeah. You know, unless you're hypoglycemic or something like that, and or even have type 1 diabetes and have crashing blood sugar, and you gotta have something, but that's different than eating out of boredom or just because, you know, you have a flight delay.
Yeah, no, I mean, I hear what you're saying, though. You know, you sit down and you're kind of locked in one position and, you know, you're bored. You just want to eat.
Yeah. I have noticed I've been traveling a lot lately, and it does seem like, and this is everywhere, though, like, you know, I kind of bitch about this quite a bit, but like all points of commerce now, or it seems like most points of commerce now in America also are selling you food. Like, you go to Office Depot and as you're checking out, there's like a smorgasbord of candy available to purchase, because how could you make it back to your car without a bag of Skittles? You know what I mean? Like, you're going to die of starvation. But then even at airports, like, it is just wild how much of the average American day is spent eating. I mean, there's just so much food everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, when you go to Europe, it's not quite, it's a little bit different, which I really like. We're gluttonous, and your podcast says it all. I mean, it's not healthy. And I think there's more recognition of this nowadays than there ever has been. I mean, I've been like preaching to my kids, you know, don't eat that, don't do this. You know, I tried to. When my daughter discovered ketchup, I was just appalled. Like, oh God, it's just cane sugar and a little bit of tomato in there. And nowadays she eats so clean, you know, and she used to think I was a freak. My kids would never bring their friends over because they thought I was a freak. They're like, Dad, there's nothing. We don't have potato chips. We don't have donuts. We don't have anything like that. I'm not bringing my friends over here.
Right.
Now they kind of embrace, you know, what I was preaching to them when they were younger.
Yeah, now we have the house that didn't have that stuff. This is how we were raised. Now it's like a problem. You know, it's one of these things where, like, if we go back to like the Great Depression, where there were soup lines and there wasn't enough food or enough money for people to feed their families, and then we progress a little bit further and we look at all the subsidization of food, of corn, of soy, of beef, and how inexpensive food has gotten. And also, like, to your point, how you stand all day long. I think the average person mostly doesn't stand at all or doesn't walk at all. You know, that a lot of jobs are sitting, and not all of them, but a huge percentage of them. And it's kind of no wonder that the health in America has declined the way it has.
Yeah, I mean, it's tragic. And, you know, the other thing is that, you know, most Americans don't really have a relationship with the outdoors. I've always had a very strong relationship with nature. And, you know, I'm privileged. I live in California, you know, and I can walk out my front door and there are trailheads that I can access. But I think that being so far removed from the natural environment that we're meant to be in is really unhealthy. And, you know, I get it. I ran across America. There's some places that are just not that inspiring. Like, you just don't want to be outside. It's not that compelling. We're here, you know, I can go run by the beach, you know, but I think that's, to me, is fundamental to being human. I mean, I couldn't just live in a man-made environment the way most people do. I would shrivel up and die.
Yeah. If somebody's listening to this, you know, I was very overweight and I've lost a lot of weight. I've lost a lot of weight a number of times, but, like, I think mostly what we're talking about is people who have set ridiculous physical goals and achieved them, that you fall into that category. But we're also talking about like what people eat and how to set them. And like, it's one thing to talk to you who started running as a kid, but what would your advice be to somebody who's inspired to get moving, to get out there, in terms that, you know, allow them to keep coming back enough to build up to some big extravagant goal? Because, you know, I think if somebody's, you know, 100 pounds overweight and they go, I want to do an ultra marathon tomorrow, they might be sorely let down.
I think for them to say, I'm going to do a marathon within a year, is a great goal. And I think anyone can do it. I know a lot of people that are listening to this or tuning in are going to say that, no, that's the other guy. Like I could never do a marathon. That's impossible. That's why you need to run a marathon, and you can do it. I mean, you can run, walk. It's a lofty goal, and it's something that you'll remember the rest of your life. I mean, when you cross that finish line, they put the medal over your neck. You'll remember that moment for the rest of your life as one of the most fulfilling things you've ever done. It brings so much self fulfillment and internal gratitude. It is really internal gratitude. It doesn't matter about the medal. I mean, sure, it's a nice piece of hardware, but knowing that you did it, it just carries over into everything in your life. So, you know, people say, I can't do it. And I convince them that you can do it. So sign up for something a year from now. Sign up in a city that you love, you know, New York or Chicago or wherever it might be, and register for this marathon. And then you got a goal in front of you, and it's intimidating. It's scary as hell. Let's face it. But when you're, you know, sitting, you come home from work, and you're either going to sit on the couch and have a beer and drink, you know, and eat some pizza, or you're going to do your training run. You've got this thing, this little, you know, voice in the back of your mind saying, "Hey, buddy, get up and get out there and pay your dues." So I think it's a really healthy experience. And I think that it's something that everyone, it's almost like an indoctrination to being human. People say, what about a half marathon? I think you can do a half marathon in training. I don't like the term half marathon. I wish they'd come up with a different term, because you feel like you're half of something that other people are doing. So it's right. Kind of like, so I don't like that. I always say, you know, you got to do the full marathon. You got to do the full thing. And, you know, people have gotten back to me and said, I did it and you were right.
Are there good training templates available that are easy to access that you think work well or work well across a large populace, where it's like, you know, I mean, I have no idea, but it's like run this many days in a row and then increase it or take a break or however it works.
There are very detailed programs that are for free. You can go online and say, you know, I want to run a marathon in 1 year. You know, tell me the program, tell me the diet, you know, tell me the shoes, tell me the clothing, and yeah, all that stuff. There are programs that combine running and walking. A good friend of mine is a guy named Jeff Galloway, and he teaches this run walk technique. It's a great way to minimize impact, and people have actually their best times doing this run walk versus just running continuously. So,
and run walk means oscillating, going back and forth between running, or is it a hybrid where you're doing, like, I've seen, I don't know if it's speed walking. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I should clarify. No, it's running for a certain time period, and then, okay. And you can actually set, you know, there's certain apps that you can set that'll, like, every 4 minutes, you take a 1 minute walk break, you know, but you're still walking pretty quickly, but then it, you know, pings again, you start running for 4 minutes and then it pings and you walk for 1 minute. Yeah.
Are there any, you talked about gear. Is there gear where you can run an ultra marathon and your feet are just fine, not blistered, not cut up, or is that just something you as a maniac are pushing through every time, no matter what?
I think it's a combination of both. I mean, footwear has become so refined over the past 5 years. I mean, it's incredible, the leaps in footwear technology. So I always tell people, you know, when you start your journey, start from the ground up. So invest in a good pair of shoes, and, you know, there are running specialty stores that I think are the best resource to get a good pair of shoes. There are shoes that have, they're called Hokas, for instance. They have so much cushioning. There are other shoes called Ultras that have a really wide forefoot, and they're neutral. There's no rocker. So it's as though you're running barefoot with cushioning. So there's all kinds of footwear technology that will accommodate your style of running. You know, people ask, what is the best shoe? And the best shoe is the best shoe that's right for you.
Right. Yeah, it's hard to say what's going to be perfect for everyone. Are you more of a fan of the more minimalist or more cushion type of a shoe?
I can run in wooden clogs.
Right.
Now I've gone to more cushion just because, you know, I've got some wear and tear on the chassis. But depending on the terrain, I'll run in minimalist shoes. Sometimes I'll run barefoot. I think barefoot running is something my high school coach always encouraged us to do along the sand on the beach. And then we'd come back to the infield track and we'd run barefoot on the grass. So I really believe in barefoot running. I see some people running marathons barefoot on the road. And I don't think that's very healthy, honestly. But I think on softer terrain, that running barefoot's really a beneficial thing.
People are running on the road with no shoes on.
Yes.
Wow. Are they just finishing with bloody feet, or have they built up calluses that are getting them through that?
Both.
Right.
Yeah. I tried it one time. Like I ran the Silicon Valley Marathon barefoot, and it was the worst thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
It was,
man,
I didn't realize any benefits. I mean, half the course was on a trail, which was my salvation, but the other half on the road was horrible.
Yeah. I mean, it's like running on a cheese grater. That is amazing. What's next for you? You run a couple hundred mile ultra marathons a year. What's the next thing you're doing?
You know, I'm going back to my Greek roots. I was appointed as the ambassador of Greek tourism. So I'm spending more time running in Greece, which the running there is amazing. So I'm looking to do some more projects like running and then swimming across to an island and running on the island, kind of doing these multi-sport adventures.
That's amazing. If you do the Dead Sea up to the highest point on Earth, when would that be?
We're looking at probably 2025. So starting out in either December of 2024 or January of 2025. The big issue right now is, you know, the most direct route goes through Iraq and Iran.
Right.
And the State Department's just saying no way. Going a more northern route is really tricky. You go through the stands like Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, and Kazakhstan. Politically, they're fine. It's just it's adds like 2,000 miles and a lot of logistics. So we're hoping the political, you know, the geopolitical landscape will change a little bit in that time frame so we can run across Iraq and Iran.
Have you checked with Iraq and Iran? What do they think about it?
That I've mentioned this on a couple of podcasts like yours, and I've gotten so many messages on social media, primarily from Iran, saying, Dean, we love you. Show up at our border. We will surround you with 100 people the entire way across our country. We're runners just like you. We'll put you up every night. You'll be escorted across our country. It'd be an honor for you guys to come run through our country. The State Department's not buying into it. They're like, you know, you're still a target. And,
sure.
But anyway, I think that'd be a really beautiful element to this adventure is to be able to just kind of say, hey, we're runners. You know, at heart, it's a commonality we all share, running, you know.
I mean, it's almost like a peace mission. You know, you could run through those countries with an olive branch or something. You know, I don't know. But it seems like... I mean, the idea at first to me is a little bit daunting and scary, but then I think that you could probably pull it off. I mean, if you did a marathon at the South Pole, you could find people who are going to get you through those countries safely.
Yeah, it's just, you know, when you have the U.S. government involved, it becomes bureaucratic and, you know, it's a whole nother layer. I don't know. I've been a U.S. athlete ambassador, so I've been on a few sports diplomacy envoys to certain areas of the world. And, you know, when you're you know, when you're brought into that world, you know, you realize how coddled American citizens are, for better or for worse. I mean, Americans take care of Americans. So if, you know, no matter if you're, a, you know, kind of a visible athlete like me or not, they're not going to let you go into a harmful situation overseas. They're going to advise you against it, and they're going to make every effort to get you out of there if something bad happens.
Yeah.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And there's no route south of those countries that's easy.
my partner in this, Charlie, yeah, that's his logic as well, that the route that is south that he thinks is safer, I'm not so sure, is paddling a two-man kayak across the Indian Ocean.
Oh yeah, wow. Right.
2 weeks in a boat together. But I love you, buddy, but 2 weeks in a boat together is, yeah, but that could be our alternative, is just a paddle to India and get out of the boat and resume our run.
Right. Man, that sounds like such an adventure. Well, I hope you do it. I don't know if paddling for 2 weeks is really less scary than running across Iraq and Iran. I don't know. They're both pretty scary.
There are lots of pirates, actual legit pirates in that area. So, yeah.
Right. But they're not looking for dudes on a kayak. They're not looking to steal your GPS, are they? Maybe they hold you hostage.
That would be the worst scenario, is they just take us hostage and try to get money out of us or our families. Yeah.
Right. But you're not hauling oil or anything like that.
No, there's no gold bullion on our boat.
Right. They take your GPS. They take your MREs. Yeah. But really, I guess you are the precious cargo there.
Hopefully they'll deliver pizzas or taking our stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Dean, that is also exciting. And I've got your book, Ultra Marathon Man. I cannot wait to read it. And I'm excited for your further adventures. Thank you so much.
It's been a fascinating conversation. I've enjoyed it. Yeah. Let's run that marathon together.
Yeah, I've done more than 100 miles on a bike in a go, and that I was able to do that every day for a week straight, and it wasn't a problem. I went to Europe for one, I think it was 2011 or 12, and rode almost all the stages of the Tour de France that year. We would get up really early and ride, and that was, you know, I think over the course of 3 weeks we rode well over 1,000 miles. And I've done a full marathon on a rowing machine, 49,000 meters, in just over 3 hours. And so, wow. Like I've got the cardio, you know, this was a while ago. I don't know that I have the cardio today. I know I could get the cardio back. Like, that's not what's holding me back, but man, I think about running across my yard and my feet, I have like incredibly flat feet.
Yeah.
And I don't, I just don't think running has never been in the cards for me, but I will tell you what I'll do. I will go to a running shoe store and try to find a good pair of shoes and maybe some insoles that correct my feet a little bit. And I'll give running another shot, but, you know, maybe I'll ride a bike when you run one of these 100 crazy marathons with you, you know, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. I mean, you know, we can ride a Century. I'll ride the Elliptico, and you know, that'd be fun as well. But yeah, if you do go to a specialty running store, remember the name Hoka.
Hoka.
It's kind of a newer brand, but yeah, you'll be amazed at how cushiony they are.
Okay. Okay. Cool. All right, man. Thank you.
Cheers, buddy. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. And now for the Q&A.
I've got a question for you from Randy.
Hi, Randy.
Randy says, I love your podcast and the guests you have on. In your episode with Dr. Andy Galpin, you mentioned the rare case of someone that takes a pill for thyroid. I'm one of those rare cases. He said, I've taken a pill and have had to get my thyroid regulated since I was a child. He says, I'm a 34-year-old male. I weigh 240 pounds with some muscle, but around 30% body fat. That's down from 320 since 2018 when I started my journey.
That's amazing.
So great. I've been leaner than I am now. In 2020, I was at 175, but I've started to slide back a bit in the past 3 years, despite staying active with CrossFit and walking. Admittedly, I've not tracked my food much like I did in the past, but I do eat healthy with the exception of drinking beer on the weekends and once or twice a month, popsicles or ice cream. I recently did blood work and it came back that my iron levels are very high. I've scheduled an appointment with my doctor to discuss this. Could my thyroid issue be affecting my iron levels? Is there anything I can do for my nutrition relating to how my thyroid disorder treats my body? So, of course, we're going to just say right off the bat, great, you're seeing a doctor, you know?
Yeah, I don't know about how the thyroid affects iron. I do know that I have been told numerous times that I have high iron and been told if I can to go and donate blood a couple times a year. And
oh, that's wow.
Literally the solution my doctor has had for me.
Okay.
And I think, unfortunately, like the first time I was told this was like maybe 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I've donated blood once since okay. then. So I'm not on top of it as much as I should be, but like I'm getting regular blood work and my iron is not alarmingly high. Right. So whatever it was when that doctor said to do that, he was like, it's no big deal. Just donate blood a couple of times a year. And I did it once and then got it checked again. And my iron I think it's all always towards the upper limits, but it hasn't been, you know, with a big red H next to it. So I don't know, you know, what, I'm not a doctor and
yeah.
I just don't know how to answer that.
Yeah. Well, anything you want to say about his, drinking beer on the weekends and then the, you know, ice cream and stuff. The only reason I say that is because I like that same advice. Like if you're on a plan and you're doing well and you're going to the gym, whatever, but then you do these things on the weekends that are like high calorie, possibly, you know, it's like,
but like, I think there's a universe where popsicles or ice cream a couple of times a month. So that says to me every 2 weeks. I mean, if we're being literal. But there's a version of my former self where I could say, like, I'm having X a couple of times a month and really it's a couple of times a week or every other day. So yeah. I think that there's just a level of honesty there. And then as far as how you're eating the rest of the week, if you're, you know, I think it's very easy for us to get to a place, maintain that place for a while, and then allow some bad habits to creep back in. And so I think it just might require a little cleanup of that and tracking your food a little bit more closely. I don't see why somebody couldn't have. And again, for me, if I was drinking beer on the weekend, it would be cases of beer. It wouldn't be a couple of beers, like how I picture a normal person, but I don't know how a normal, I don't know. I don't really hang out with beer people. I suppose I one of my uncles would have like a beer with dinner. But I don't know if he's going home and drinking a 12 pack after that. I have no idea, but he's not portly. So I don't know. I don't know what, you know, two or three beers should not throw you off that much if you're otherwise being perfect.
Yeah.
A serving of ice cream every 2 weeks should not throw you off if you're otherwise being perfect. Stuff like that is hard for me because it, you know, if I really like, I got into Halo Top for a while and then it just became like, well, I'm just going to have one of these things every night. And then I was gaining weight and, you know, it wasn't so severe, but it was something I had to go like, what has changed? Why am I up 3 pounds consistently over, you know, over the last 3 weeks? I've crept up. I've not been really maintaining. And it was that I started eating, you know, something that's still, you know, it's only 460 calories. Like, okay, but that's like the size of a normal meal. So I'm adding a normal meal and it is mostly carbohydrates right at the end of a day. And not that that matters, but my body's not putting them to use overnight. You know, like 60 grams of carbohydrates for me is fine right before I exercise or even right after I exercise, but right before I go to sleep, I'm not saying it's going to make me gain fat if I'm perfect in all other areas, but I do wake up feeling a little shitty. And so like that crept up on me and I had to like stiffen my own discipline there a little bit and go like, oh, this is fine. Halo Top for me is fine every month, but like once a month, you know, as a treat. It's not fine for me to eat every day.
Yeah. No, so
that's what I got to say to you, Randy. How much beer? How much ice cream?
Right.
How often?
Right. Randy, let us know what your doctor says. Totally, you know, obviously curious about that and if that has effects on you and stuff. And thanks for asking your question here. Hope that we had some helpful advice for you. If anyone else has a question for Ethan, you know what? You can always ask it. You just email hello@americanglutton.net.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee. You can follow us on Instagram @AmericanGluttonPodcast. Sincerely.